Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favorite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Who's going to pay my bills? Are people's opinion going to help pay my bills and put food on my table? No, they're not.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Speaking of life-changing moments, I've noticed this week that you're both appearing in FIFA 08 and FIFA 14. This is part of your legacy, right? So before we get into the picks here, I want to throw to this video. This is Owen Heary in his first video game appearance, if we have that available to throw to. It's been an unlicensed Shelburne in FIFA 05 and his last appearance is in FIFA 14.
It's great, isn't it?
Look at that. Look at that.
That's more like it.
Yeah.
It's not bad, is it?
Talk us through that similarity.
Image. That's the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Head.
Had hair. Yes. Like Vigo.
And Barry, you're not going to be left out here because you made your FIFA debut in FIFA 08 and then you returned with Shamrock Rovers in FIFA 14. If we can throw to the Barry video here. Look at that.
There you are. Looks slim there.
Yeah.
Look at those. You know you've made it, lads.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I was on the cover as well.
You were on the cover?
Yeah, myself. Messi and Richie Tell, three fantastic players. Yeah, all on the cover.
How did that come about? Are you asked?
It was
permission?
A poll. It was going to be the first ever Irish cover of it, and it was a poll put out of who you wanted on it. And
you sat there all day voting.
I sat on there. My brother's in IT, knew everything about it. And me and Richie Tell never got to meet Messi, of course. But
what do you get for it?
Got a game. That was it. And on the cover, the prestige. That's all I wanted. Yeah.
Ah, oh, jeez.
We got a PlayStation.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
We launched the PlayStation and the games.
So lads, these are very interesting picks. So we had the luxury there when Shane O'Donnell was playing as well. We were able to talk about this a bit. So the best way to start is, because we get you on to talk about what's happening now. And sometimes we dip into the past, but this will allow us to do it a bit more. So ye share time together with Buzz for about 2 years, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. From the 2000s into the 2010s.
Yeah.
2010-11ish. Yeah. So talk to us about your relationship as goalkeeper and defender. How did that work?
Yeah, we had a good relationship. You know, I knew Barry from playing the league. He was a goalkeeper. So when they said he was signing Barry Murphy, I actually thought he meant Brian Murphy at the time. So I knew that he had a fair bit about him, and you know, came in playing in front of him. You need confidence in your keeper as a defender, and straight away you have that with Barry. You know, good with his feet, good with his hands. You know, people said his height went against him, it didn't. Because he was very, very good in the air as well, you know, catching balls when you needed him to catch them, and good shot stopping and holding on to shots. Not like keepers now pushing it back into play or around the post. He was a proper keeper where he, you know, always got his hands on the ball and kept it and gave you that safety behind you. So, good relationship. And then we went and worked in the office together and doing things for Bowes, outside of Bowes, like going and promoting the club in the area, going to schools and having, you know, skills come into Daly Mount and organising things that way. So we worked off the pitch as well together.
You were at Bowes about 3 years by the time that you joined, Barry.
Yeah.
So what was that dressing room like to go into?
It was tough for me at the start, and obviously going in with Owen, the most decorated player in the league at the time.
Yeah.
It's like a massive figure, the captain of the club as well. And I think I'd made a comment a couple of years before saying I was on a TV show and they asked me would I rather go up to Bowes or be relegated, and I said relegated. So 2 years later I'm at Bowes holding the scarf up. But that was the first thing he said to me, wasn't it? But no, it's just a brilliant squad of players to go in, and obviously moving across from Shamrock Rovers, there was a lot of heat about that at the time.
You were there for 5 years too.
I was there since I was a kid before that as well, and there was a lot of heat on me at the moment, and at the time getting phone calls and things, and Owen, to be fair, put his arm around me and said, this is all about football now, you've got to focus on the football, and that's what it was all about, a brilliant team to be in.
Phone calls from fans,
death threats
to the landline. Oh really?
Jesus, really?
Calls that, you know where you live, there was like the key marks on my car. There was calls saying we're going to be outside, we're going to pull into a van.
That was just me. Because he said he wanted to get ready.
Yeah. I thought I recognised the voice already. Yeah, that kind of stuff. But luckily, it never happened. Thank God.
You can't just shake that off, though. Right? People are like, oh, don't worry about it. They're only clowns. And it's like, yeah, fair enough. But you're not the one getting them.
No, not when it's that personal, where it wasn't parked outside the stadium or the training ground either. It was outside my house, the car was parked.
Okay.
And so, and I was living with my parents at the time. I was only young, living with my parents, and the car was marked, so they obviously did know where I was living. And it just gives you a little bit of a thing, kind of movement in the body when you think about it, shuddering. But no, listen, it was all part and parcel of it. It was a massive move. It was a bold move at the time as well, because we just lost out to Bowes the year before, and I was the number one keeper. Alan Manis came in then, and a decision to make, and I decided to go when Pat got in contact with me.
Talk to us about the step up in competitiveness when you made that move, or what the difference was between Rovers and Bowes at that time.
There wasn't a lot, really, was it?
Yeah.
Have to be careful now. Yeah, down to talent now, Jordan.
No, but we were head to head. Like, I think Bowes were obviously the dominant force at the time. Michael O'Neill had just come in, and we'd started to get right back into it. I think we only lost, was about nine or something, lost the league by with Rovers, and obviously Brian Murphy was moving across the water then at the time, so there was speculation about who was coming in, and I was number one at Rovers, doing really well at the time. It was around the Madrid time, kind of that era. Then Michael O'Neill was in, and Tommy came in as goalkeeping coach from Linfield, and Alan Manis became available. Suddenly he was in, and it was a talk of, listen, it's going to be between the two of you. A game later I was out of the team, so you know your fate is sealed at that point. So made the move across, and it was the right move at the time. Probably not in hindsight, the way that the financial situation kind of unfolded there, but at the time it was the right move for me.
Were you always a goalkeeper?
Always a goalkeeper, yeah. So I was obviously a small goalkeeper, but I just always loved it, throwing myself around, and I was brave, to be fair, as well. I'd come out and try and dominate the area, maybe more than other people, because I had a point to prove. And that was Roddy, the first thing Roddy Collins said to me when I met him in the car park in Spa, going from the 21s, is, that fella's trying to get me sacked. What are you, 5'6", 5'5"? Like, it's like, you're not going to be able to deal with this. And it was a little test from him as well, going, is he going to be able to deal with it? And I think 4 or 5 weeks later, I was in a number one at 18 at Rovers.
How did you react when that was said?
Well, I was looking for money. When I first went in, it was like, all the people from the club football were telling me, this is what you need to ask for, this is what you need to ask.
Yeah.
And that was Roddy's way of saying, you're getting nothing, basically. You get your 100 quid and you work your way into the team. So I was like, can't answer back that. Like, it was fair play to him.
It's like what you say that with Barry's height, that when we played against him, I was always put the ball in on top of him, you know, but he always dominated, you know, whereas you'd have bigger keepers that couldn't dominate in that way. Mm-hmm. And you'd be like, you'd say to Patrick, you'd put the balls in, sure, you'd just catch them. You're better off just keeping them white, because, as you said, he's more determined to come out and catch them and deal with them rather than stand on his line. Like, so
that's pure mentality, is it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wanting it.
Wanting it and determined to do it.
So if you're playing five-a-side now, you play away outfield, like you still enjoy playing outfield.
Yeah, I love playing outfield. Like, that's just like that Fabian Barthez in his story, like, he always wanted to play in pre-season friendlies and things. I was always like, give me a few minutes, just let me show what I can do. I'd probably be terrible now if you put me in, but like, I kind of changed my game after St. Pat's, learned to play out from the back, and from then on I realised I was actually decent with my feet as well, like playing out. So
what about yourself, Owen? Were you always in the position that you became renowned for?
No, I started out centre forward for River Mount.
You hear that a fair bit, don't you? It was like a fella starting different position.
Anywhere, like Dermot Keighley, when Dermot brought me to Shells, he wanted me to play as an outside right and put pressure on Desi Baker at the time.
Yeah.
And he forgot that he had me at Home Farm and I was playing right full, because he played me outside right when Stephen Gifford came in then. And it was only then, through the fact that they've lost a couple of games, that he put me in full back, and sort of I stayed there and played centre half a few times, or played left full. I actually got player of the year as left full, the PFUI player of the year, playing left full, and all the years I played right full, and I got player of the year. Like, so it was mad. Like, and Pat Fennell was the outside left.
That was something
like, you know. But Pat just kept letting me go inside him to have a few shots and things, and that's how Bobby looked better than I did.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/football. Fuel points TC.
AI agents are everywhere. automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Do you know, we talk about the great eras of Irish football. It was like the 1970s. You'd have like big names retiring from abroad coming over, like, you know, like Bobby Tamling and George Best, a tiny period of time. I remember it fondly from the late 90s and early 90s. You'd have like Glenn Crowe and Ali Cahill and some like brilliant players. This was to mention a couple, obviously. And then now there's this like resurgence in interest that we're talking about all the time. Are ye satisfied with the eras that ye played in? Like, would ye have swapped an era that you would have loved to have played League of Ireland at a different time? Or was your time
best? I really loved my time.
Yeah.
Like, I started in 93, finished then in 2014. So I had a lot of time. And you're like saying about players like Steve Archibald came over and played in the home farm team that I was there. Only played 45 minutes because Keely told him to sling his hook.
Like, oh, really?
Oh, it was...
Why?
Well, we were playing Derry, and Derry actually were in fourth division. They were winning the league. They were in the FAI Cup. I think they'd won the treble that year. But Dermot says to us, look, sign a Steve Archibald. And another fella called Alan Snodden, I think, played in England, called him the Cyclops. So brought them into the dressing room, and you were like, this is Steve Archibald, play for Barcelona and Man United Sports, like, you know. So every time we gave him the ball during the match, he got battered. Like, Peter Hunt and all just came through him, like, for fun. Beat us 3-0, and half time came, and next minute Keely's in doing his usual rant, said, see you, Stephen, get off, you know. And Steve McGuinness is taking off his top and said, all right, what are you doing? You, not you, Archibald, get your gear, sling your hook and get out. And
that was it.
Him out at half time. Onto the plane, gone. And I'm like, he's had to talk to this legend. Like, he's had to talk to him like that. And that was my like fourth sort of year with Dermot Keely, you know, you don't mess with Keely. And he threw him out there and then, like,
right, wow.
What the hell happened in the first half?
We were battered. Like, every time, you forget, Steve Archibald was about 40 odd at the time, you know, and they were giving him the ball and he kept getting battered. And then Alan Snodden was playing centre half, and I can see why they called him the Cyclops, because he was taking the ball down on his chest in the 6-yard box and was being taken out and putting in the net, and he only had one vision, I think. But yeah, Keely absolutely ripped him, and that was it. It was one and only game for home farm and sent packing.
What about yourself, Barry? Same question about the era that you played in.
Yeah, kind of undulations really in this league, doesn't it? Goes up and down. That Bowes kind of Rovers rivalry 2010 was brilliant. Mm. And if Bowes had kept up the finances, I think it would have been a brilliant era, going toe to toe. And just now, obviously, the finances now are probably four or five times what they were back then as well, like in terms of player wages. But it kind of went up for a bit in the 2010s, 2011s, then dipped right back down, obviously, after recession. But the quality of players, you talk about players coming in, I remember like Carlton Palmer and all Carlton Palmer in and
F and a Kuku,
Just, you're just suddenly playing against these lads going, I'm just watching him in the Premiership a couple of years ago. And
that year they went bust in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
And Derry gained points and we lost points for it, because Derry got beaten by Dublin City. So we were going for the league, Shells was going for the league against them, and we'd beaten Dublin City, so 6 points got taken off us, whereas Derry only beat them once, so 3 points got taken off them, and all of a sudden the gap is close. So that's why Stewie had that rant that year, because of that was happening, and the fact then that Stephen got onto the, supposedly got onto the Bowers camp and told him to do one, which I understood. But Stewie then had a rant with Tony after we won the league. Next day I'm walking in town with him, and Stewie's like, my phone was hopping, I hadn't a clue what was going on. He said, my phone's hopping, and all the Derry fans slaughtered me. I'm like, because we beat them, like, for the league. He's like, no, because of me talk after. And I'm like, what talk? And again, I say that I'm angry, Tony. I'm angry. You know? Yeah. I was like, oh, here we go. Well, that 2004, like you're saying, that was a brilliant year, because financially it was the Celtic Tiger and money was good, and you were signing 3-year contracts, 5-year contracts. Good. It wasn't a case of a 1 year and then I'm trying to roll into another one. There was like a good financial support back then.
It kind of turned into the Asterix League then. One team was gone every year. There was the Monaghans, the Kildares. Every year there was always an Asterix in the bottom of the league, and points deducted from somebody. So it kind of took the credibility away from the league a little bit, but nowhere near that now.
Come here, there's a hell of an eclectic mix here for the choices, you know. So it was an experiment of sorts. So we did have King Fisher, of course, was really the first group you had to be there. But really, we only got to the sport at the end there, because that was around when Killa was released and it was a huge thing in the summer. So this one, we're like, okay, we'll put the brains together here. And these choices are ridiculous. There's one time in India where you end up spending a month there with Ronaldinho competition. There's a just a random training session on Thursday night, Daily Mount. There's a Legends game. There's United Porto, the coming of age for Jose Mourinho, I suppose you'd call it. But will we start with one that you shared together in Slovenia?
Yeah, we tried to time it down the best we could.
Like, you don't have to now. Don't worry about it.
But you would have to for this one. But, no, we played over in Slovenia, European game, and that night we weren't allowed out, but the usual, you sort of sneak out and go down to the local pub, and a few of us went down. It was more the older lads. We told the younger lads they weren't allowed, so they had to go back.
That's leadership. Yeah.
But so Bocker Bailey, Robert Bailey was with us, and a few other lads, and we're sitting in the pub, and you see this lad standing over at the bar, and he had red corduroy jeans on, pair of black shoes, white socks, real Eastern European old side gear, you know, with a black leather Mac.
Extra from Taken.
And we're sitting there and we're having a few drinks, and we're saying to Buck, I said, you know what, you look great in that gear walking around Ballyfermot and things like that. And he's like, do you think so? And I said, yeah. And Barry's like, yeah, I think you'd look well in those shoes and the Mac and blah, blah, blah. And yeah. So we're sitting there, and the usual, still filling our face full of drink. And next minute, Bocker's gone missing. Now I'm missing, gone missing 15 minutes, 20 minutes. And like, where's he gone? He's probably had enough and he's gone home. Now, little do we know, the old doors of the toilet gets kicked open, walks out in your man's gear. He had the red corduroy trousers on, the shoes on, the socks on, the jacket on, everything that your man had on, he had on. And there's your man walking out with his tracksuit on him. Now, the worst thing apart of it is that when we seen him, we only went away, obviously we'll come back, we only had a tracksuit with us. We only had the Bowers tracksuit coming back.
Yeah.
But the next day we come up to training, Barker's tracksuit is gone because your man has had to go home in it. And Barker turns around with all this gear on, and Pat Fennis is looking, shaking his head, saying, what in Jesus has gone on with you last night? And then he explained it to him, and Pat was like, typical Barker. That was just typical of him, isn't it?
It's a song story for him as well. We were in Daily Mount, obviously, with him as well. And a young lad, Gary Burke, just a lad coming through the ranks as well. And he came in, these white chinos, bent onto him. Puts them up on the rack, and you could just see all the lads going straight away. Just, this isn't right, is it? Go out to train. 5 minutes later, Bocker comes out wearing them, putting clothes on, slide tackling everybody, doing everything, absolutely ruining them.
Your man's lads, cream jeans, all in bits. Hopefully, he probably paid 100-odd pounds for them at the time.
Welcome to the first
yeah,
that's
it.
Just Bocker, isn't it?
And did he keep the gear for years after? Would he show up?
Has he probably said,
would he show up in the pub? Like, he'll identify him from miles away. Yeah. And do you remember much about like the match? This is Olympia Ljubljana 2011.
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, because it's funny, because when we ask people to do these, right, what it's increasingly become is not necessarily like the event or the match itself, it's the story around it.
Yeah.
So do you actually have memories of the game?
Yeah, we got beaten 2-0. Do you remember?
I played them twice, actually. There'll be one with Shells and one with Bowers. And I remember Stewie got cracked his whole head. The fella went in and literally done him off the ball, cracked his whole head down. He's got about 20 stitches in the side of his face, something like a real nasty team. And I think when we played him over there, he sort of had that little bit of ill feeling against him at the time as well, because I'd previously played against them, but they beat us. They were a good team, like, in fairness to them.
Yeah, they were using that, we hadn't used it before, we were using the Umbro balls, they were using that Tubolani ball, do you remember?
The one that would go miles.
That was a goalkeeper, the finger.
That's a nightmare for you.
The finger breaker, we call them, like, but we were warming up with them and they were just flying all over. It was like the old balls, you kick in the air, come out, it was going everywhere, but, and then we think we went one.
The PlayStation come out then, didn't you? Jumped that way and the ball went.
We were running up against them at home in the second leg as well.
We should have beaten them well at home,
unfortunately.
Jesus, those football, like a 2010 World Cup, you were probably looking on being like, well, I hope it's contained to this tournament alone.
Yeah.
And then a year later, you get it.
It's mad. I think it's got 10 miles an hour faster now, the balls, what the stats were after we're talking about during the week.
Really?
Way faster than the balls we would have dealt with. But they were proper leather balls we were playing with. Now it's just, it's a plastic coating on the outside. Terrible for goalkeepers, no grip on it. Like,
did you enjoy away European games? Because I imagine it was like, oh, of course I do, but there might be a degree of anxiety about them because it's so alien, I suppose, to what you're used to week in, week out at home.
There's a massive pressure on them then, though, because you were only getting one game pretty much.
Knocked out, and then that was it.
Like, you weren't, like, that shows how well that Shell's team did to get so far now. When you're looking at the fallbacks now, and you can fall back through different rounds that, like, Rovers and Shells have done over the years. But then, if you didn't get through that first round, it was all about that. And that was the massive thing with TNS at the time. Bows were counting on going through with that money, and obviously we had won the first leg 1-0, found out about the financial trouble halfway through the week about not getting paid and things.
They basically came in to us in the dressing room and asked us to rip our contracts up the week leading up to the European Games, and we're like, well, rip them up and do what, like, and that's it, just go. There was no, look, if you tear them up, we give you this, so we do that. It was nothing. It was just, and you could see fellas were overthinking it then, saying, well, financially then, I have mortgages to pay and such and such, and we're going into a TNS game, heads all over the place, like, you know, fellas not thinking about the game, more thinking about, well, what's my next move here to financially keep the family stable.
And you got hammered in that game. It's 4-0.
On an Astro, we played on an Astro over there, which you wouldn't be allowed playing it now. Do you know what I mean?
It's that bad.
Yeah, it would be really, really bad.
I think they were getting rid of the Astro and they'd actually cut down the Astro. Yeah. Do you remember? It was a long enough Astro when we trained on it, and the morning of the game, they cut it right down because they were tearing it up. Like, it
was, and the stand was so small. Like, even for Bowes fans travelling, it was just a small little stand and everyone was together. It's like playing the AOL, being honest, you know. Wasn't a great, but the heads are all over the place. It wasn't, I don't think, no matter what happened, we wouldn't have been able to put a performance in. No.
And if you'd won that game, would that have helped alleviate some of the fight, or were the troubles so bad that it didn't really matter?
To cut down and do what you wanted to do and move it on as not full-time anymore.
Right.
Go back to amateur and part-time and things like that. That was the will of the club at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpoints.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
2004, United Porto. This is the Jose Mourinho touchline game. It's a Castagna gets the winner, and you're over there with Shells. Equaliser, yeah. Tim Howard spills it and he scores, yeah.
Kick. So, yeah, we went over, we were training in United's training ground all week.
That's class. How did that come? How did that access?
Sure, Ollie Bourne.
We can have a montage of you saying true Ollie Bourne.
True Ollie Bourne. That was the man. He was Alex Ferguson, as I said, good mate. Yes. Yeah. And so pre-season, we're going over, thinking on it. We're over in the training ground. Fantastic training ground. We're training away, and then we realised that United are playing Porto on the Wednesday, and we're thinking, oh, it'd be great to get tickets for it. Now this is on Wednesday. We're thinking this and saying, well, you'll probably get 4 or 5. We'll raffle them out to players or whatever it may be. So pack it on to Ollie and said, look, any chance you can get a couple of tickets for the match tonight? So leave it with me, Pat. Yeah, we'll get back to you. Rings Pat and said, look, Stephen the Greek, or Paddy the Greek, he said, actually, we'll meet you there and look after you with tickets. And Pat goes, grand. All of us, 30 of us going down to the game. Fella steps out, 30 tickets, there you go. Halfway line, great seats, perfect. Watch the game. And then, as you say, we're sitting there. Ronaldo comes on, the 75th minute goes off in the 80 tournament on a stretcher, gets injured. And then you're looking and saying, right, 90th minute, you get a free kick. And you're like, oh, here we go. And see the free kick. Howard spills it. Castagna puts it in the net. And then you see Mourinho out of the dugout, sprinting down the whole length of the pitch. And you wouldn't have seen that from much of a manager back then. Like, you know, like, there he is with the long black coat. He's actually looked like Booker.
That's what I'm saying.
He's running down the whole sideline and straight down. So you had to be there to see it. But it was brilliant atmosphere, brilliant scene. But as a United supporter, that was the one that knocked him out. And Porto went on then and succeeded, done very well in the competition.
Do you remember, like, seeing Mourinho run live? Like, do you remember being distracted by that and you're watching
it? Look, you know, when you see the goal going in, you see them celebrating, like, who's the, and you just see them, you know, running along. They say, look at the manager, what's he down there? Never seen Pat Fennell do it. I never see Dermot do it.
That's it. Like, you never see Fergie do it for sure. Like, the thing is,
you see Fergie run out and jump on the sideline
and run back. Yeah. But, like, Mourinho wasn't an unknown because they had won the UEFA Cup against Celtic the year before. But he wasn't famous either. It was because he was on the cusp.
He coming out saying, I'm the best manager in the world. And he starts to on the cusp. Games, you're like, all right, yeah, come on, get back in your box there for a minute. But, you know, when you're seeing him doing what he was doing, and then the Porto team, if you think of the Porto team he had, like, he was fantastic.
I mean, Deco and the lads, Maniche. Yeah,
brilliant. And that was the goal that gotten through, like, you know, in away goals and that.
So training, talk us about that. So that's a Carrington. This is the Carrington days, not
they were moving to their new training ground. Yeah. I think at the time, so we were using Carrington and pitch is perfect. Like, you know, if you want to do a little tennis game, you know, football tennis, they had that there. They had all pitches, like, and it's all cut perfect. There wasn't, so we train on one pitch, you could leave divots. You weren't training on that pitch for the rest of the week, you were over on another pitch, like, so yeah, it was really, really good. You know, when you walk into the training ground, the facility itself, you see pictures up, say, of, you know, whoever it is, Cantona or, you know, Brian Robson. So all these photographs going around the walls, like really, really proper training facilities.
Were you near the first team and the manager and all that?
And they were looking to train elsewhere, but a few of their players that would have been, say, coming back from injury and things like that would be there training. Whereas the first team would be training later on after we train or whatever it may be. So we were probably bypassing them more than anything. But they were leading up to the game, so they wouldn't have been that close to us.
Oh yeah. Okay. Next pick now. This is only last year.
Yeah.
Legends game.
Yeah, got a phone call a couple of days beforehand.
Is this because of FIFA? It's like, who are we going to get?
They might start them with, exactly, with yeah. Messi.
we got to get Barry Murphy in this.
10-year anniversary, whatever it was, 20 years. No, I've just got a call. Wherever they play the UEFA Cup or Champions League final, they have a local player from the local league playing in it. So I got the call. They needed a goalkeeper and went in to meet them in the Shelburne. Walking in, and I think they thought I was a competition winner or something, walking in with my back in the back, like, it was this lad, and walking in, the first one I meet is Ashley Cole talking to David James at the door. I'm like, okay, right, there's some decent players here. And they're like, yeah, you're going upstairs to get your kit. So I go upstairs to the shower and open up the dress or the door, and Stephen Freund is standing there, arse naked. Guys get Mendieta and Diego Forlán sitting on the couch looking at him.
No reason for him to be naked. It's just like just, footballers. Yeah. That's what they do.
They're all just looking up.
I walked over, took my hand, I was like, you can put something on. Just trying to stare straight in the
eyes. This is the Spurs fella.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a proper like thick accent on him. So, welcome. Delighted to have you. And I was like, okay, great. And then... to be fair, Gareth Farley was there as well, and I would have had it. He was kind of the only one that recognised me. I had a bit of history with him. Then it saved his penalty for Bowes against Bowes, and he got the sack that night after it as well. So it was
delighted to see you. Yeah. Oh,
you start staying with Stephen.
Intimated I was some sort of footballer as well to the lads as well, but I wasn't a winner or something. But we went down to the Dublin Castle there anyway, and I was walking in with Gaisca Mendieta, and he was like, I thought I was going to get loads of boos here from Irish people. I was like, what? What a penalty in 2002. And he was like, oh, I thought it'd be like that anyway. But we played the game, went back to the hotel, and all these lads were dying to smell a gargle on the bus. They'd all been out the night before, and I'd stayed in, done everything right to try and do well in this little five-a-side game. But the class was unbelievable. Robert Pires on the ball, like, just taking the piss out of everyone. But then we went back to the Shelburne and had lunch, and I'm just thinking, this is crazy. I'm sitting with all these boys looking around, and they're talking about players at Man City coming through the ranks. David James is talking about different managers and things and getting all the inside scoop and everything. And then look over at the bar, and Will Ferrell's standing there. I was like, what? This is like the five people you meet in heaven type book, you know, who's at your dinner table. Walks over and introduces himself, sits down and has lunch with us as well for about 10 minutes. And just gone, this is absolutely crazy. And I don't want to take out the phone and take pictures because I want to feel like I'm part of it. Like, but just the most surreal day, incredible. And went to the UEFA Cup final that night as well. Had two tickets to it, and sitting out with the... at the table having dinner at half time with the PSG head, you know, the fella, the UEFA, the owner of PSG.
Yeah, yeah.
Sitting at our table there, me and the wife, I'm just going, it's absolutely incredible.
Is this the Ademola Lookman hat trick?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And last year in UEFA.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just going, it's the most surreal day ever. And
Jesus.
Then go to bed and wake up and go to work as normal the next day.
Mm. So who were you chatting with on the bus?
I was sitting in front of talking to Ashley Cole. Mendieta was sitting beside me, and Gareth Farley was behind me talking. So he was talking about his parents were from Dublin anyway. He's Liverpool, wasn't he? He was from. Just talking with them, and then sitting at the table with Perez, talking with Diego Forlán, had just gone back to tennis as well.
Yeah.
And then actually, when we were going up in the lift up to the dressing room to give the gear back, Figo was there as well. So
got a photo. Had to give the gear back.
I had to give some of the gear back.
Ah, no.
Some of the gear. What did you hold on to?
I had the top, the shorts, and the socks as well. We had to give a jacket. We got a lovely jacket as well, you know, like the Anthem jackets.
You
walk out in one of those lovely Anthem jackets, but they're like, they need them for the Champions League game the week later. So.
Do it the next person outside who has it now.
Yeah, exactly. But they were playing a week later in the Champions League, all the same lads. It's like, you need a keeper. Give me a shout for a week later. Never got the shout.
No,
yeah.
So the five-a-side game was in Dublin Castle, was it?
Dublin Castle, yeah.
Okay.
It's like an inflatable pitch we're a rock solid ground. But like David James is properly throwing himself around, like getting involved.
Yeah.
Like, geez, I have to do that as well down the other end. But
who stood out? Perez, was it?
Perez was a joke. Like,
really?
Just, he looked the same as he did when he was a player, just his touches. Ashley Cole took it very seriously as well. The other lads were just taking a piss out of each other, trying to meg each other the whole time. But see, I think it was about 20 all the game in the end. It was just a brilliant day.
I
heard Will Ferrell can play a bit, by all accounts.
Can he? Yeah.
Yeah. He plays those soccer aid games, you know, and the celebrities.
Yeah.
He's a decent player.
It's just the last person you think.
Yeah.
He's sitting at the bar like that, and he just turns around and just sat down at the table and go, what the hell?
Is he coincidentally there? Or there as
part? No, there for the final. I presume he was a guest.
Oh, yeah.
Anyone that was involved was at the Shelburne, so I presume he was involved as well.
So we go from this UEFA Legends game, it's a who's who, to a training session in Dalymount on a Thursday night.
Yeah, so, you know, we've seen, like, there's a lot of things that happen in training over the years that you would see. You'll see fights, digging matches, managers giving out, we see Bocker doing mad things and things like that. So, but one of the times I was managing Bowles, and towards the night, training session, Dalymount, the night before the game. Training session went well, done our set pieces, our shape, our shadow play. And I said to the lads, right, you've 15 minutes on your own to do whatever you need to work on, heading, passing, shooting. So I take the strikers up and do a bit of shooting with them. So they're laying the ball up to me and I'm laying it off and I'm putting it in the net and so on. Next minute I see this woman marching across the pitch coming out from the Dalymount stand. And I'm like, oh, must be something up, you know, probably something wrong there. But she marched straight across, shouting, roaring, bollocking, the hands in the air, waving in the air. And I'm like, what's going on here? And she starts grabbing a young fella and she's dragging him across the pitch.
One of your players?
One of the players. And he's shaking his arm. He's like, no, you know, and she's grabbing him. And he's, no, and the hands are flying. And like, I have to go down and see what's going on here. She hands him something and she storms off and goes off. And I said to the young fella, all right. He said, yeah. He said, that's me ma. She said, she's trying to get me home with the baby. So she's going out tonight. And I like, she goes, yeah, yeah. I told her I'd been finished at, say, 8 o'clock and it's now 20 past. She'd had to be sitting outside the last 20 minutes to collect me. And I'm like, are you for real? Like, is this a met? And he goes, no, no. And I said, what'd she give you? She said, she gave me my money to get home on the bus. And in that joke, when I say she grabbed him, she was grabbing. And the players are looking around like this. And you know, what do you say to players the next day? Like, you try to make a joke out of it. I just turned around and said, you know, off the cuff. I said, look, there was a family emergency, you know. But obviously then the players know because they hear about it then the next day. And he does got the piss ripped out of him. From, I don't think he ever turned up to train ever again, the poor young
man. Stop.
I swear to God, yeah. The way she come on, and I said, it must have been probably our first date that she was going on that night.
Something important.
Yeah. Something really important, yeah. And the way she come on, I've never seen it ever in my life of some woman coming onto a training pitch and grabbing her, trying to grab her son off the training pitch.
What were you doing at that time? What exercise were you doing?
So players were doing their own a little bit at the end, so you have 10-15 minutes on your own. So midfielders would work on that passing or crossing, or defenders working ahead, and I had the strikers taken away doing shooting. So keeper in goal, laying her up, shots in the goal. And that's when I just seen a frog marching across the pitch and I'm like, oh my god, what's going on? But when she was grabbing them, you know, you get that little fright saying, she's physically grabbing one of the players here, what's going on? You automatically think something really serious happened. Then when you go over, he said, no, she needs me to go home to babysit tonight. That was it. I just asked. I said, I've totally seen everything in football.
Yeah.
I literally have now.
Would you always have a memorable training session throughout the years that you can both think of that, like, I'll never forget that incident? Cause it's probably because they all blend into each other.
There's a lot of fighting in training over the years.
Is there, yeah?
Yeah, a lot of fighting. But then like you see the
fist fights, proper.
Fist fights, yeah, proper digging matches in training over the years. Like, you know, I think I was involved in most of them. Like, but honestly, there was always that. And then you'd walk off after training and it's all forgotten about. But in dressing rooms, then you'd see fellas doing ridiculous things. Like we were talking about one that we won't say again. But there's things that happen that you're like, did he really do that? You know, you see it happen and then. I said, after matches, I seen we got beaten by Bowes 4-0 and Dermot Keighley fighting with Pat Fennell. Pat Fennell's in his nail standing in the shower, like, and Dermot's looking to kill him. Freddie holding him back. Dermot comes out, kicks a skip, pulls his hamstring, you know. And it's just things that stick with you. And you're like, even though you got beaten 4-0 and it's in your head, you think, did that really happen? Yeah, I'll remember that one for our future. And they're the little things that stick with you. Not the game. I know we got beaten 4-0. I couldn't tell you anything about the game. But I do remember that he pulled his hamstring from kicking a skip.
Was training for you different as a goalkeeper, was there specialised training throughout your time?
We'd have probably half an hour, 40 minutes with the keepers each day, and then you get integrated into the small sided games kind of later on. But we were always kind of left to our own devices, the lads, whatever, volleyball or whatever you're playing over there, and kind of take the piss out of us a bit, like, and then you come in and play. But
yeah, you never wanted the keepers involved in your training sessions, unless they were involved.
That's what it was. We wanted to get involved in the Rondo sessions, but it would always break down when it came to us. Like,
just used and abused goalkeeper, and stand and go around and try some shots.
With your hands, we used to say to them, you know.
That's what you often hear of, like, the great teams in football, that the training sessions were harder than the matches.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and that was the case for you as well when you were at your most successful throughout both your careers.
Yeah, the training sessions were always harder. Like, you know, you think when you're going in to play a game, if you got beaten 3-0 in a training game, it'd be murder over it. Like, you know, you'd have rows with your teammates, even though you're playing the night before. Like, our training session was so intense the night before the matches. Like, you'd put more into it. And I think I heard Stewie Bourne coming out in the comment about it as well before, saying that, you know, the games, if you think you might have Wes Houlihan and Alan Moore on one team, and you'd have Stewie and Jim Crawford on another team, didn't want to lose that battle because they wanted to play, and Joseph and Doe on one team. So there was always that battle that you wanted to be in the starting squad for the next day, and our training sessions were intense. I remember Pat pulling me aside and saying, look, you need to calm down and train, you're hurting too many people. And I was like, but that's just the way I've trained, like, because I wanted to keep a high tempo. It was just the way it was going on, so it was up to them to get out of the way if I'm a tackle.
This is a very stupid question now, but did you enjoy matches?
If you won.
Yeah.
It's purely result dependent. No, but at the tapping.
Also, like, I'd be depressed for the whole weekend. You wouldn't talk to me. Like, I've often gone home after matches and losing the game, and I wouldn't talk to the wife, the kids. They knew just to stay away from me. I'd be lying in bed for a day or two. Like, it just really affects you mentally. Like,
is there a difference in the games where you've actually played well personally?
Yeah.
No, you know, you put in a performance, but it's the result at the end of the day, and I couldn't take that. Like, it really got in on me, and the only ones you could talk to people about it would be the people that played in the game. So Pat would ring me, or Stewie would ring me, and we'd talk about it. But when you lost a match, like, it's just affected me so much. Like, you know, as I said, I'd stay in bed, wife and you don't come up near me or the kids, because
did it get worse as the manager then?
Yeah, twice as bad, because you can affect it as a player. You go back into training and you would work twice as hard that week, and then you go out and say, I'm not losing this game, and you'd win it, and a relief, like, you know, grand. But as a manager, you lose a game, you'd have that feeling again. You're like, I can't play the match, and then you try fix it the next week, and if you lose again, it just keeps getting in. So mentally, that's why I say it wasn't for me. You know, mentally I was going home and I was in the bad form, or I just felt depressed all the time from it, and it's a hard thing to take.
That's why you said you'd never do it again, is it?
Yeah,
management?
Never do it again. Yeah.
Would you coach, or would it be the same thing?
Coaching is easier. Like, the manager's the one that stops it. So a coach will go home, I'm at the point on the best training sessions I can do, everything's grand, the manager will ring him, what do you think? Yeah, this player, that player. Manager makes the decisions of the day, coach will just put on another training session, and it's easy. So I didn't mind doing coaching sessions for local teams and things like that, but managing wise, I said, it is mentally affected. It does mentally affect you, and I know other managers come out and said it, and other people have come out and said it, but it's a depression that we don't talk about too much. Yeah. You know, it's like, that's only football, but it really gets in on you and it eats you up inside.
It's hard because when your loved ones genuinely ask, how was the game or how'd you go on, there's probably a frustration in the answer because it's like, I can't explain it to you. Yeah, I can't give you the context of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You don't want to talk to them. You know, my mum and dad live around the corner and they'd come around, and you just don't want to talk to people.
Yeah.
Like, the only people you talk to
who you did it with. Yeah.
Play the match. Or, you know, play football.
Yeah.
They could ring you up and say, this didn't happen for me, or this went well, or that didn't go well. And they'd understand it. But you couldn't get that across then to your family. And that's the difficult part, you know, because they're the ones that are seeing you at the end of the week, and they knew from the result of how your feelings will be coming home.
Barry, did you have to consciously focus when you're in goal, when you don't have much to deal with?
Yeah, that's probably the biggest part of it.
Yeah.
I remember Aaron Ramsdale talking about that.
How your mind can drift, I'd say, very easily.
Yeah, it definitely does, and it's like a split second and it's back on top of you again, and that comes from training though as well. The thing about training that was different for goalkeepers is that it's all six-a-side stuff, five-a-side stuff, and crossing and shooting, so you're involved with everything. 90 minutes of a game, probably involved for 5 minutes in total of it, so it's trying to keep yourself focused for those 5 minutes, and that's what the top keepers are good at, on the edge of their box, and that's where communication and talking to players, talking crap basically for 90 minutes, trying to keep yourself in the game. That's what a lot of goalkeeping is about. But does come from training, but just like Owen's point as well, like, at the start of my career I loved going in and playing matches. I was like an 18, 19, 20 year old. It was all for fun and I was getting paid to do it, so it was brilliant. And then as your career progresses and it turns into your career, that's when the pressure comes. Like, we were getting 3-4 year contracts early on. Then when you're coming out to the 2 and 1 year contracts, you don't play well, they just get somebody else in, and then your responsibilities get more, where you're kind of looking at trying to secure proper wages, and that's where it kind of goes down later in your career, and that's where the pressure is really on. That's where I found difficult towards the end of my career, is the pressure of getting new contracts.
Well, Ger, we've done this series for, I'd say, about 3.5 years, right? You had to be there. And I think this final entry is the longest from start to finish that we've ever had of one. And can you put context on this for us, Barry, as we wrap today's show? India, Shamrock Rovers, 2015, Ronaldinho, 1 month. How does that all make sense?
Yeah, we were 2 weeks into pre-season, 2015, and you'd usually go out to the Leinster senior team or over to Abbottstown and play somebody from the first division in a couple of pre-season games. And we got called in basically and said, listen, we're going away for pre-season for a week or two. Like, oh, brilliant, we're going to La Manga or Marbella or somewhere like this. And the owner was actually lives in Australia, Ray Wilson. We thought, oh, maybe we're getting a trip to Australia. There was always talk of going over there and playing a game. But no, it was India. It was 2 weeks at the new Naji Ronaldinho tournament over there. We're like, all right, sound something different anyway. So we packed the bags, went over, played a couple of games, and got knocked out in the quarterfinal stage. Played a team, the Argentinian Olympic team. Absolute scumbags as well. They were spitting on people and doing everything in the game. We ended up beating them, but they were staying in the hotel. Everyone was in the same hotel. But we were just told, like, basically, right, we're out of the tournament. We're going to be going home. And 2 weeks later, we're still there until the tournament ends. We were told there was no flights going to be coming back for us. Eventually, 5 flights became available. So we were raffling them off, and it was lads ringing the parents and ringing their families. Oh, I've won the lucky ones. I've won a ticket home. That didn't materialise. So then we said, right, we're going on a day out. We went into a bar, and you spoke about Kingfisher earlier. Kingfisher is the Indian drink. It was absolute rocket fuel over there. We had 3 drinks in, and we'd lads stand on the table singing Molly Malone, puts his hand up into a fan, gets a finger taken off. We're coming back, back to the hotel. This is 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It was like the hangover. Lads coming from different areas, missing people. One of the Brennans, Gavin Brennan, turns up in the tuk-tuk, and he's the third person on the back of a tuk-tuk, but he's just a big crate of beer coming back into the hotel. And Pat Fennell was the manager at the time. He goes, just get them back into the rooms. Once they're back in the rooms, let them do what they want. And I swear to God, we were in the rooms and they had these tiny little windows, and we're all looking out like it's like the metal cup spiking them off. Just let us out, get us out. Just the most surreal place. Ronaldinho was nowhere to be seen. Never seen at the tournament once. I don't know how he put his name to it, but we came back anyway, and I think we won 3 on the bounce in the first few games.
Christ, you went from the hangover to Apocalypse Now, back in the room at the start.
Not prepared for you for a fin half to weigh like a trip to India.
One month is outrageous. Sorry,
like, it was 26, 27 days away. It was absolute madness, but great, great memories.
Amazing. And that's a fantastic episode of You Had to Be There as we wrap up.
You had to be there.
Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Who's going to pay my bills? Are people's opinion going to help pay my bills and put food on my table? No, they're not.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.